France's nuclear fleet. Aging nuclear power plants in Britain have also shut down. Meanwhile, more of Britain's electricity is also coming from wind power and from solar energy, which are intermittent, making the system more complex to run. The measures come as the Met Office has issued a weather warning about freezing fog on Monday, 23rd of January. A level 3 cold alert will remain in place for England until Wednesday, 25th of January, after temperatures plunged below minus 10 degrees Celsius in parts of Britain last week. Temperatures are expected to drop as low as minus 2 degrees Celsius on Monday, 23rd of January, with very little wind, meaning there will be limited electricity from wind power and higher demand from British households. National Grid has run several tests of the demand flexibility scheme this winter, but has not so far needed to use it outside of testing. The closest it has so far come to doing so was on 28th of November last year, when it issued a notice to the market saying it might be needed, but ultimately decided that it was not. Technically, it is possible for the call to cut supplies on Monday evening to yet be called off. However, it is understood National Grid agreed payments on Sunday with suppliers to do so, meaning that this is very unlikely. A source said it will be the first live event for the demand flexibility scheme. Bids have been accepted from the energy suppliers and prices agreed upon, and that can't be reneged upon. It is locked in for, and it will be for the first time it will be used for real. Under the scheme, Britain's households who have signed up will be notified by their supplier that they can be paid to cut usage of electricity between 5 p.m. and 6 p.m. on Monday, 23rd of January, and how much they will be paid to do so. They do not have to opt in. How much households can earn will depend on their supplier and how much power they would normally use, but some could earn around £10 per session, for example. During testing, suppliers have been paid £3 per kilowatt hour saved, but they are likely to get more outside of testing. Some are understood to have agreed on £6 per kilowatt hour for Monday evening, 23rd of January. They can choose whether to pass on the full amount to their customers or even pay more. Suppliers who have signed up to the Demand Flexibility Service scheme include Octopus Energy and British Gas. It is open to households in Britain with a second-generation smart meter. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered this story and tells us more. Britain's electricity generators have been forced to warm up coal-fired power stations for the second time this winter after a sustained period of cold weather and lower wind generation. With a high-pressure weather system with associated light winds likely to dominate for a few more days, National Grid's Electricity System Operator, or ESO, said early on Sunday, 22nd of January, it had asked Drax to start warming two of its coal units at its North Yorkshire site and EDF to do the same for one of its West Burton plant in Nottinghamshire to ensure supplies on Monday, 23rd of January. The ESO, the electricity system operator, added that it was also activating its live demand flexibility service between 5 p.m. and 6 p.m. on Monday, 23rd of January. Selected customers will be financially incentivized to cut their electricity consumption between 5 p.m. and 6 p.m. The request over the power plant followed a similar one in the middle of December, although back then the coal-fired stations were not used, as the operator generated enough power from other sources. Our forecasts show electricity supply margins are expected to be tighter than normal on Monday evening, 23rd of January. The electricity system operator ESO said, "We have instructed coal-fired power units to be available to increase electricity supplies should it be needed." This does not mean electricity supplies are at risk and people should not be worried. These are precautionary measures to maintain the buffer of spare capacity that we need. Last summer, amid a peak in gas prices caused by the Russia-Ukraine conflict, the electricity system operator ESO negotiated a winter contingency contract with a number of coal generators at the request from the Department for Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy. Overall, this is likely to be a challenging winter for energy supply throughout Europe. We have taken extensive measures to try to mitigate the impact for British consumers and expect that, under our base case, margins will be adequate, ESO said at the time. Normally, there is enough electricity power generation by onshore and offshore wind turbines. However, electricity system operators said it had taken the precautionary step to ensure the lights stay on as the country gets back to work on Monday, 23rd of January. With much of the United Kingdom enjoying light winds and a cold sunny day on Sunday, 22nd of January, wind power accounted for just 6.8 gigawatts of electricity, about 17.6% of the total electricity being generated on that day. 2 weeks ago, on 10th of January, British wind farms were producing three times as much electrical power, averaging 21.6 gigawatts of electricity and setting a new record. In spite of Sunday's move to prepare coal-fired units for generation, data shows that Britain's generation is becoming greener. More than 50% of the country's electricity came from zero-carbon sources in December, and another record was achieved on 30th of December, with a peak of 87.2% of electricity coming from zero-carbon sources in one day.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light.
The Creator made Adam in his image, then placed the world in his care. May you walk alongside the Creator in righteousness.
God of Abraham, take my child into thy hands, that he may live to thy service.
God has spoken to us before, through Abraham, Noah, Moses, and through Jesus Christ. Why should we be so surprised that God speaks to us now through Muhammad?
Viewpoint,
a critique of movies with religious themes on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in name of God, welcome to another edition of the program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Javad, hosting this program, and my dear brothers, to guest speakers in the studio with me, Brother Yasser and Sayyid Abdullah. Brother Yasser, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the program. And we are really happy actually to have you for this program.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure being here, inshallah.
Inshallah. Thank you very much. And Sayyid Abdullah, thank you very much as always.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me as always.
Okay, the pleasures are ours. Well, today, before we actually touch on some of the critiques about the movie Never Heard, that's what we're going to focus on today, and probably in the upcoming episodes or the few episodes to come, is called Never Heard. This is produced in 2018. But before us actually getting into its critique or criticism, let's take a listen to a trailer of this movie, and we'll be back. Don't go away.
The gang leader, formerly known as A-Train, continues to maintain his innocence despite insurmountable evidence against him.
This man may be a lot of things, but I'm telling you, he's not a liar.
You better be right about this, Monty. I just need to ask you one question. Did you rob that convenience store and kill that little girl and that cashier?
So you already died.
I should be out there.
You are right where you need to be to hear from God.
Don't allow your past to defeat you.
See, up there was a distraction from being a father to your son. Aaron, he's selling drugs just like his father used to.
All we do is sell a little weed. Right?
Boy, you know you hear me talking to you.
Yeah, Ma. God's feeling something.
I think this is the piece of evidence we've needed. Let's go get him out of there.
Back to the program Viewpoint on IRIB English Radio. This is the movie critique program. And as we promised, we are supposed to work on the movie Never Heard, produced in 2018. Well, if I give you a short précis or its plot, that would be while his father spent his lifetime or his life in prison, Jalen is lured into the Los Angeles drug world. All that stands against Jalen following his father's footsteps is the power of prayer, as a girl he meets in church shows him that life offers other ways. Well, this is a movie actually directed by Josh Weber. And some of the stars of this movie are Romeo Miller, David Banner, Karrueche Tran, and Wilson. Well, let me start with you, Sayyid Abdullah. How did you like this movie? Did you like it at all?
Did I like it? Good question. I can't say I liked it. I watched it.
Uh-huh.
That's all I can say.
Wasn't it worth actually watching it once?
Look, it's a very typical Christian story.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there are a lot of stereotypes in it. And I think they just made it very boring. I mean, I've seen a lot of Christian movies, and we've done a lot of Christian movies together.
Exactly.
And with this one, they just made it very boring. Like, you know... I know that, I mean, the theme was good, but as in terms of cinematic perspective, it was quite dull, if I can say the least.
I see. All right. Thank you very much. Brother Yasser, you know, the rating for this movie was 5.5 out of 10. All right. Yeah, I'm in DB, I think. And the box office for it was for about roughly 4 million. And as Sayyid Abdullah was referring to this movie as a kind of dull one, did you find it dull? What's your idea of this movie? Maybe I can rephrase
this
question.
I said, so what the summary was there and what I took from the Sayyid is another Christian movie, right?
Right.
So prayer in the Christian faith is something important. And obviously looking at the environment a lot of these youth in America are growing up in, it may have been a way to kind of show that, okay, there is a way in which you can escape how society wants you to be, or try to maybe force people more to go into the church or go to church, for example, because numbers in America, as statistics show, the people who do go to church or have faith in the church, however, as over a period of time got a lot less.
Mm-hmm.
But this is maybe a way of making people realize, no, you know, the church is still there. Prayer is still effective in your lives. Don't right. neglect it and so on and so forth. So it may be like one, as the said, said it, just another Christian movie, because in the Christian faith that the two concepts are important, love and prayer. Mm-hmm. These are two important concepts.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Maybe they were both shown in the movie. To that extent, maybe.
I see. And how about the critics that you have searched?
I didn't find anything like specific about it online. So I did a search, and so all I found was a very small summary of it, which you yourself read.
Yes.
About this incarceration of a father, which is something so normal in America, of a black adult male for something that he did not commit, or he says he did not commit.
Right.
And then the child of that particular individual growing up without a carer, growing up without a role model,
mm-hmm.
and then obviously trying to find his way in life.
Right.
So that is, like, it's not something uncommon. I mean, mm-hmm. if you look at a lot of these stories or any movie that deals with this type of thing, it always ends up either going the bad way, is that the person ends up going to prison or dying.
Right.
Or being saved. And one of the ways they say a person can be saved is by a prayer or the church.
Right, exactly. Thank you very much. Let's take a short break by listening to another part of this movie, Never Heard, produced in 2018, directed by Josh Weber. And then we'll be back. Don't go away.
Out of everything I wanted to do in my life, I never heard my father speak.
Back to the program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio, with me, Mohammad Jawad, hosting this program, and my two guest speakers, Syed Abdullah and Brother Yasser. Brother Yasser, there is a part of this movie, that there is a dialogue, and one of the characters says, out of everything I wanted to do in my life, I never heard my father speak. And this is where, it is highlighted that everybody, I mean, the viewers would somehow understand or come to realize where, it came from. I mean, the title of this movie came from this part, I never heard my father speak. So basically it refers to some kind of familial tension which is going on in most of the families, especially in modern life, right? So why is the familial relationship in the West, like this? I mean, so remote and cold.
Because, for example, one of the things that has happened is, first of all, the family structure over a period of time, because of many different factors, has lost its standing in society.
Mm-hmm.
Even in any part of the world, even in America at the beginning, family right. had a very high position.
Right.
And within the family, every single member of their family had a specific duty to do
mm-hmm.
and to something known. In Islam, we have that same thing, and it comes not something new. It is something that the ancient scholars and the ancient sages themselves have kind of emphasized in their works. It is not something new. It is something that's always been there.
Right.
Islam obviously kind of expounded on it to a certain way, gave it direction, not to give people objectives, but the direction for those objectives
yes.
or mission, so to speak.
Can a part of this problem be traced back to the conduct, the style of life today? Because we used to have, historically speaking, we used to have some kind of extended families, right? So some families, the father, mother, all of them actually having their closed ones living next to them or in the same house, basically, all right? But today, everything's focused on the nuclear family and also single-parent type of life. Can it be traced back to this?
One of the things that could be traced back is to the reason. I mean, for example, families not being together cannot be said as a complete cause of it. It could be a cause, but not the complete cause. Even this, for example...
Right.
Because, for example, we have people today who live in all different parts of the world, but yet we see that You know, families are still the same. It doesn't matter, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm here. Sayed is here. He has family in Australia. I have family in South Africa.
Yes.
You know, our families are fine. There's no, inshallah, there's no breakdown there. Even, for example, in those joint families, there's something, there were more problems because people got in other faces more often as well. But the issue of the role of a particular person in a particular family is something that has, you know, been destroyed.
Yes.
Especially, for example, in this particular instance, that the father figure was being removed from the family, right? So the father figure being removed from the family, a young boy, I think his name, what is it, Jaylen his name was?
Jaylen, yeah.
Jaylen.
Yeah.
So he's growing up in an environment, you know, modern-day America, where a father figure has, or again, a young adult male has been incarcerated, right? So he needs a role model.
Right.
So one of the biggest things is the absence of role models.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be a father figure, a teacher, a priest, or so on and so forth. This could be one of the main factors, actually. Again, it's not the complete factor. There are many different factors that play into it.
Yeah.
One factor could be the absence of a legitimate role model.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. That's a very nice, actually, point to take a break on, and then we'll be back. But before that, let's take a listen or to a short part of this movie, Never Heard, produced in 2018.
Did you get some more stuff?
Boy, you know you hear me talking to you.
Yeah, Ma. Got you a little something. Here, Ma. Always know how to take good care of your mama, don't you?
Back to the program, the movie critique program, Viewpoint on IRIB English Radio. We are working on or criticizing the movie Never Heard, produced in 2018, directed by Josh Weber, with brother Yasser and Sayyid Abdullah, my guest speakers in the studio. Sayyid Abdullah, you know, there is this part as at the beginning of this movie, you know, mom is actually asking his boy, Diggy, basically, if he got her some drug, you know, you obviously see the movie and you see that she's a drug addict, you know?
Yeah.
Well, what can affected families do to get rid of this problem? Basically, this is an epidemic kind of problem, you know, and you see in some of the families, unfortunately. And what can religion do in this regard? Can it play a significant or useful role to eradicate this problem, the drug problem?
There is no doubt that religion can and does play a major role in terms of trying to eradicate drug use or abuse or any sort of addiction.
Yes.
And, well, I mean, Islamically speaking, it beginning from the fact that it's forbidden to begin with.
Yes.
And then you make a way out. However, like in the case of the movie, when the parents themselves are into it, it makes it really hard for any religion to come in between.
Exactly.
Because the child themselves, or the children themselves, or the child is hopeless and he has no other way. Like this kid, he's saying to his mom, like, you know, I got it for you. You know what I mean? Like, he's trying to look after his mom.
And brother Yasser was pinpointing the problem of the role model, the question of the role model. And in this case, as you can see, if the parents
themselves are failing, what can children do, or what can even religion do? Mm. Because religion would affect me as a parent, and I would try to pass what I've learned in my own faith, that drugs is wrong, alcohol is wrong, you know, addiction is wrong. And then I would try to educate my children if they are, you know, if they are into this path.
Right.
And I can help them and I can draw them out and, you know, become like a role model to them. But when the parents themselves are in this problem, then I don't think religion can do much.
I see. Okay, thank you very much, Sayyid Abdullah. And thank you very much, Brother Yasser, for your nice contribution to the program, Viewpoint, the movie critic program on IRIB English Radio, that we tried in which to criticize the movie Never Heard, directed by Josh Weber. And hopefully we are going to continue this program on this movie in the upcoming episode. Thank you very much for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Anytime the devil time. Always say I am that. Anytime the devil tells me I am something, always say I'm not that. You can do all things through Christ which strengthens you. You can make the choice today. I don't care how deep you're in it, you're coming out of it. I declare in Jesus' name that today is your day of freedom.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear friends, and let us present you a brief but bright gem of an advice from the Holy Prophet's 10th infallible heir, Imam Ali al-Naqi al-Hadi, peace be upon him. The life of this world is a market in which some people gain and others lose.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
The chip, a tiny piece of technological equipment, was in its most basic form born with transistor radios. 60 years ago, when the chip industry was still nascent, a mere 4 transistors could fit on a chip. But today, as many as 11.8 billion can. Also known as a semiconductor, the chip is used to animate everything from toys to nuclear weapons. Sometimes described as the world's most critical technology, the chip is so crucial a feat that it has been the subject of a technological war between the United States and China for quite some time. Let's see how the war is unfolding in a nutshell.
In early October came the United States' biggest salvo against China in that war. U.S. President Joe Biden imposed export controls that would block China's access to advanced semiconductors. A day later, the local government of Shenzhen, China's technology hub, announced a plan to advance its semiconductors industry faster. And just days later, as the Chinese Communist Party's 20th National Congress concluded, the Chinese government designated the war over technology a threat of priority.
So far, semiconductor manufacturing companies in the U.S. have been making 30% of their revenue from sales to China. The country imported $400 billion worth of chips in 2021. To offset the consequences of U.S. restrictions in the technology field, China is said to be taking the whole-of-the-nation approach, mobilizing all national resources.
China invested as much as $11 billion in quantum computing between 2009 and 2011, compared with $3 billion by the United States. Government-led investment in semiconductors has seen $137 billion of funding for the industry. China's central bank has introduced special low-interest loans for high-tech firms, and hundreds of labs are being launched to enhance research.
By all appearances, the United States' tech war on China is inducing the country to do more on its own to gain the know-how. The war may set China's tech industry back a number of years, but if the Chinese muddle through and acquire the science through their own research, they will end up in a better position in several years than they would have been had their access to American chips been unhindered.
The sanctions have thrust into uncertainty the activities of some of China's supreme semiconductor manufacturers. Advanced Microfabrication Equipment Incorporation, or AMIC, is one such company owned by semiconductor whiz Gerald Yen, who has earned a doctorate from the University of California and is an American citizen, who returned to China in 2004 to contribute to the tech industry of his homeland. The October sanctions also prohibit, quote, the services of American talent to China's semiconductors industry. Yen, while originally a Chinese, now faces hurdles as a U.S. citizen to continue to work at his own company in China. So do six other top managers at his firm who are also U.S. citizens.
But in other important ways, China's by-the-bootstraps approach is already paying off.
The country's largest semiconductor manufacturer, the Semiconductor Manufacturing International Corporation, had started shipping 7-nanometer chips despite American sanctions. Yangtze Memory Technologies Corporation, the state-owned memory chip producer, was on track to supply parts to be used in Apple iPhones before the embargo. Last year, domestic revenues in China's semiconductor industry surpassed $157 billion, and 19 of the 20 fastest-growing semiconductor companies globally were Chinese. In his report to the Chinese Communist Party's 20th National Congress in October, days after President Biden announced the most sweeping restrictions on China and the chip industry, Chinese President Xi Jinping said China had to, quote, win the battle in core technologies. That President Xi made that appeal and that he used the word technology 40 times, up from 17 in the report from the 2017 Congress, are no coincidences. China is perfectly aware of not only the implications of the new American sanctions, but also of the critical need to achieve self-sufficiency in technological fields that, for all intents and purposes, will determine the course of history in the years to come.
Well, it's a war that the United States may have launched, but it doesn't look like that it's going to be the one that the United States gets to end. In September, as a lawsuit was proceeding against him in a federal court in the United States, Mohammed bin Salman abruptly became Saudi Arabia's prime minister, a role with sovereign rights that he hadn't enjoyed previously as of only the country's crown prince. That dubious move paid off on Thursday, November 17th, when the U.S. State Department said that bin Salman enjoyed head of state immunity in U.S. courts, effectively dooming the lawsuit filed against him for his role in the murder of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Here's how Bin Salman escaped punishment in a nutshell.
Khashoggi was a loyalist-turned-dissident who lived in self-exile in the United States and wrote articles critical of Bin Salman in the Washington Post. In late 2018, he traveled to Turkey to obtain papers he needed to marry his Turkish fiancée from Saudi Arabia's consulate in Istanbul. On October 2nd, he entered the diplomatic building. He never left, not on his own feet. A hit squad flown in from Saudi Arabia had been waiting for him inside the consulate. There, they tortured him to death and then dismembered his body, taking his limbs outside in suitcases. Khashoggi's fiancée, Hatice Cengiz, waited for hours outside for him to appear. When he didn't, she alerted Turkish police.
Soon, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, a personal friend of the would-have-been couple, joined the fray head over heels. Hardly a day went by without President Erdogan or the Turkish government commenting publicly on the case and thus directing international attention to the Saudi government or dropping hints that Bin Salman, the crown prince, may have been personally involved.
Turkish security agencies even released audio tapes from inside the consulate with people yelling and Khashoggi screaming, effectively detailing the grisly murder and keeping the international community focused. And only a month and a half after the murder, the Washington Post, which had been Khashoggi's publication of choice, dropped a bombshell. The CIA had concluded that Mohammed bin Salman had personally ordered Khashoggi's murder. The CIA never spoke publicly about the reported finding.
Already the world had learned of an earlier princely gambit. Mohammed had become crown prince through what U.S. media termed as a coup, clearing the way of his rivals and holding the then crown prince in custody until he agreed to step down. To learn that the prince had now been so emboldened as to order the murder of his critics in foreign countries seemed to have been a step too far. And it seemed like the prince was going to be held to account.
There was reason to believe that way. President Erdogan was unrelenting in his public admonishments of Saudi Arabia. Years later, before and after he assumed office, U.S. President Joe Biden was openly critical of Saudi Arabia. At one point during a presidential debate, and when he was asked about the Khashoggi case, Biden said he would make the Saudis, quote, pay the price and make them, in fact, the pariah that they are.
All of that angry moral posturing went to the dustbin when the U.S. State Department said that the Saudi prince had legal immunity. Saudi King Salman, Mohammed's father, had already bent over backwards to make that possible, but even he himself couldn't have believed that the Americans would fall for his scheme that easily.
Legally, the prime minister himself, as king of the country, Salman acted against Saudi law by delegating that position to his son in late September, just as Khashoggi's fiancée was doing everything she could to have justice delivered at court. President Biden's rhetoric and his anger over a move by OPEC Plus to limit output at a time of energy difficulties for the U.S. and Europe had given further hope, even though the Turkish denunciations had already died down years ago.
Fraught as it is with behind-the-scene jockeying, betrayals, and other moral failures, world politics took away not just one woman's hope for justice, but the entire world's faith in the willingness of the U.S. and other governments to stand up to tyranny despite all the rhetoric to the opposite effect. In killing Cengiz's hope for justice and perhaps closure, the U.S. and others had one message for all murderous dictators in the world. You're safe in America. That's about it for this episode. Thanks. We'll see you next time.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Salamun Alaikum, so welcome to this episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. Be with us because we're going to speak about the fault finder in the view of Islam.
إلهي وسيدي ومولاي ومالك رقي يوما بيده ناصيتي يا أليما بذري ومسكنتي يا خبيرا بفقري وفاقتي.
Today, Friday, is the 5th of Rajab, 1444 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 7th of Bahman, 1401 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 27th of January, 2023 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. We bless this moment by recitation of chapter At-Tawbah, verse 79.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. الذين يلمزون المطوعين من المؤمنين في الصدقات والذين لا يجدون إلا جهدهم فيسخرون منهم سخر الله منهم ولهم عذاب أليم.
Those who criticize the contributors among the believers concerning their charities, and criticize the ones who find nothing to spend except their effort, so they ridicule them. Allah will ridicule them, and they will have a painful punishment.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
In the view of the fact that the foundation of the behavior of the hypocrites was opposing the Muslims and finding fault with them, they often cavilled at the Muslims' affairs and mocked them. Among them was that some of the rich Muslims remitted their wealth in the way of Allah more than the amount which they were enjoyed upon. Those rich believers did it eagerly and at pleasure in order that Islam could glitter more and more. Their main aim was that they might obtain some divine spiritual rewards. There were also some Muslims who did not possess plenty of properties, but with difficulty they provided some money and spent it. These two parties of the Muslims were mocked and were found fault by the hypocrites. As you know, this is today's special and we're speaking about the fault finding in the view of Islam. The teachings of Islam not only guide us to the ways of attaining success in the next life, they also encompass the principles that show us how to achieve success in this life and improve our society. One clear principle from amongst them is the honoring of Muslims, due to which certain things such as swearing, slandering, backbiting, and fault-finding are prohibited in the Sharia and Islamic law. The disease of fault-finding is spreading like a virus within the society. It is becoming the norm for people to forget themselves and instead search for faults in others. One of the scholars once said, "Do not find faults in other Muslims and do not seek to know of their hidden matters which Allah Almighty has concealed due to him being the one who veils matters."
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Today we are going to talk about picking faults and picking faults in others mostly. Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam has said, لِيَكُنْ أَثَرُ النَّاسِ عِنْدَكَ مَنْ أَهْدَ إِلَيْكَ عَيْبَكَ. Let the best person in your estimation be the person who points out to you your faults and shortcomings and presents them to you as a gift. Principally, the first step that a person can take to cure this physical and spiritual sickness and remove the social evils is that one becomes precisely aware of the sources of these diseases and their various types. The person who is scared of straight talk finds the truth being brought out into the open as being something bitter to accept. He finds it hard to acknowledge and accept any sort of open dialogue about the problems in the society. Such a person wants the spiritual and societal shortcomings of a community to be swept under the rug and kept quiet, and desires that people should not speak about such things. These people are never content that the writers and speakers of the community bring up the problems of the people. And anytime these things are brought up, then those who do not like this done try to destroy and refute what has been written or said. Therefore, we must say to such a person, may you be destroyed, not bringing up these issues, that is, the issues of the community, is an error in itself. It is not only in the instance of this negative ethical trait, that is, speaking bad and picking the faults of others, and the natural human disposition of guiding people and showing them their shortcomings and faults that are confused with one another. Rather, it is possible that in many of the other natural human dispositions and ethical principles, a series of other detested spiritual and ethical traits can also be confused with one another. However, with careful research, we are able to discern the limits of each of these from one another and keep them separated.
Reflecting on different Islamic topics, short commentary of the Holy Quran, hadiths of the infallibles, lessons from the life of the infallibles, all in today's special from IRIB English Radio.
Fault-finding is the habit of the miserable. Confucius said, "The great person calls to attention the good points in others, while the miserable person calls to attention the defects in others." That is perhaps why losers can easily say something is wrong, and winners usually say, "How can I correct it?" Why losers say, "Why don't you do this?" And winners usually say, "Here is something I can do." Fault finders normally tell others about someone's faults and rarely have the guts to face people. Fitting the description of two-faced with the Prophet Muhammad, assigned to troublemakers and hypocrites. Fault finders also tend to miserable themselves, lacking self-esteem. And since they focus so much on blaming others, they become resentful and, rather than cherish people, tend to develop a desire to undermine and discredit people.
Everything I have, everything I own, everything I eat is thanks to you. Every breath I take, every bird I hear, every smile I see is thanks to you.
Now, one important question: how to stop finding fault in others? The world is a kinder place when we apply this new perspective to our interactions, and we are better for it. When we judge others, we are being victims. In order to stop being a victim, we have to remember two things. Perception is projection. We see reality through filters, opinions, and beliefs that can radically change what we are perceiving. When we play the victim, we need someone to blame. In order not to be a victim, we have to find where we are responsible for what we are seeing. Dear brothers and sisters, look into your own self and find the source of your own hatred. For example, when we blame others for riots, crime, or violence, we need to look into ourselves and find our own hatred. Violence in others is a projection of the violence in ourselves. Our time is better spent dealing with inner violence.
The meaning of al-humaza, according to one translation, because sometimes it's a little bit difficult to get an accurate English translation for powerful Arabic words. Al-humaza means the fault finder. The one who has the habit of finding faults with others, exposing others, backbiting others. This is the title of this chapter. Quran is very sensitive. You know what the hadith says? The honor of a mu'min, the honor of a decent citizen and individual in society is greater than the Kaaba. How great is the Kaaba? Imagine if someone goes and sets the Kaaba to fire. How would you see a person like that? What kind of a violation would that be? In this hadith, Allah says, the one who ruins the reputation of my believing servant, his act is worse than destroying the Kaaba. The Kaaba, as great as it is, it's a physical building. As great as it is and as symbolic as it is. But that human being is the servant of Allah. He has emotions, he has feelings. She has emotions, she has feelings. Allah considers that a great, great violation. So when we recite this chapter every day in our salah, we remind ourselves to try to keep away from that. I know a lot of you will run into this challenge. Many people tell me, Sayyid, I'll go to a gathering and my friends are backbiting. What do I do? If I want to sit there and lecture them, they're going to hate me. They're not going to want to hang around with me or hang out with me. What do I do? How do I treat that? My recommendation is, whenever it comes to these gatherings, my dear brothers and sisters, go prepared. You know how much reward that has in the eyes of Allah? You know, we think worship is praying and fasting. This is the best act of worship you can do.
Topic was the fault finder in the view of Islam. Inshallah, on the next episode of this program, today is a special from IRIB English Radio, we continue to search and find more about this interesting topic. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we meet you soon. And till then, may Allah bless all of you. Fi amanillah.
لا إله إلا الله الله ربي محمد نبي علي الإمامي
لفتى إلا علي علي إمامي علي إمامي علي إمامي
لا إله إلا الله الله ربي
محمد نبي علي إمامي
لفتى إلا علي علي إمامي علي إمامي علي إمامي.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.